47. Top Secret Conversation. The bell for the dinner break could be heard in every nook and cranny of the ex-seminary, and its ringing reached even Kondrashov's remote landing. Nyezhin hurried out into the open. The exercise yard was not spacious, but Nyezhin liked to make a path of his own, away from the others. As in his cell, it was 3 paces forward, 3 paces back, but if he was alone, that was enough. In this way, he derived from the exercise period a few blissful moments of solitude and readjustment. Hiding his civilian suit under the long tails of his indestructible artillery overcoat, not taking your suit off in time was a serious breach of discipline, and he could be turned away from the exercise area, but it would be a pity to waste walking time by going to change. Nyezhin took brisk steps to get there and occupy the short path he had beaten between one lime tree and the next, on the very edge of the permitted zone, near the fence beyond which stood the bishop's ship-like house. He did not want to dissipate his thoughts in idle conversation. Snowflakes fluttered, so sparse and weightless that it could hardly be said to be snowing, though they did not melt on the ground. Nyezhin began walking, head in the air, looking up at the sky, not where he was going. His body was invigorated by deep draughts of air, and his soul fused with the peace of the sky, overcast and snow-laden though it was. But somebody called his name. He looked around. Another shabby officer's overcoat and a winter cap. He, too, had been arrested at the front in winter. Rubin, half-concealed by the trunk of a lime. Rubin felt embarrassed, felt that he was treating his friend and messmate badly. Nyezhin would be prolonging, in his own mind, the meeting with his wife, and Rubin had to interrupt him at that sacred moment. He showed his embarrassment by extending no more than half of his beard from behind the tree.
"Gleb, old friend, if I'm barging in at the wrong moment, just tell me and I'll disappear. But I do very much want a word with you."
Nyezhin looked at Rubin's gently imploring eyes, at the white branches of the lime trees, and at Rubin again. However long he went on pacing that lonely path, he could enjoy no more the mingled joy and sorrow in his heart. It was already cooling. Life went on. "That's okay, Lev. What is it?" Rubin emerged and joined him on his path. Gleb gathered from his solemn, unsmiling look that something important had happened. It would have been impossible to tempt Rubin more sorely than by burdening him with an earth-shaking secret and forbidding him to share it with any of his closest friends. If the American imperialists kidnapped him from the Sharashka that moment and started chopping him into little pieces, he would never reveal his top-secret assignment. But to be the only Zek in the Sharashka in possession of such a tremendous secret, and not tell even Nyezhin, that called for a superhuman effort. Telling Gleb was the same as telling no one. He would not pass it on. Anyway, it was only natural to confide in him, since he alone was au courant with the classification of voices, and could understand how difficult and how important the task was. Besides, it was a matter of urgency to reach an understanding with him while there was time. Later on, there would be a frantic hurry. There would be no tearing yourself away from the tapes. Things would become more and more complicated. Lev had to have an assistant. In short, ordinary professional prudence fully justified what might look like betrayal of a state secret. 2 shabby military caps and 2 threadbare overcoats, shoulders touching, feet muddying and widening the path, they slowly paced side by side.
"My old friend, this conversation never took place, never, never. Even in the Council of Ministers, no more than a couple of people know what I'm going to tell you."
"I'm as silent as the grave, anyway. But if it's so desperately secret, maybe you shouldn't tell me. What you don't know can't keep you awake."
"Don't be silly. I wouldn't tell you if I didn't have to. They'll have my head if they find out. But I'm going to need your help."
"Spit it out, then." Watching carefully to make sure that no one came too close to them, Rubin quietly explained about the recorded telephone call and the purpose of the work he had been asked to do. Though Nyezhin had lost his natural curiosity since he had been in prison, he listened with intense interest and stopped in his tracks once or twice to ask questions.
"You see, old fellow," Rubin said in conclusion, "it's a new science,
the science of phonoscopy, with its own methods and its own horizons. To embark on it alone would be both difficult and boring for me. How great it will be if we both put our shoulders to the wheel. To be the founders of a completely new science, there's something to be proud of. And that's what he calls science, Nyazhin muttered. As far as I'm concerned, it stinks.
All right, Arcesilaus of Antioch wouldn't have approved. But don't you want an early release? If we succeed, you'll get a hefty remission and a clean passport. And even if we don't, you'll make your position in the Sharashka more secure. You'll become an indispensable expert. People like Anton won't dare lay a finger on you.
One of the limes bordering the path forked at chest height. This time, instead of turning around when he reached it, Nyazhin leaned back against it and rested his head in the fork. With his cap pulled down low on his forehead, he could almost have been one of the professional crooks, and the look he gave Reuben was in character. This was the second time in 24 hours he had been offered a chance of salvation, and for the second time it gave him no joy.
Listen, Lev, all these atom bombs and rockets and your newly hatched phonoscopy.
He spoke haltingly, as though he wasn't sure how to answer.
It's the jaws of the dragon. People who know too much have been walled up in dungeons since the dawn of time. If only two members of the Council of Ministers, obviously Stalin and Beria, know about phonoscopy, plus two idiots like you and me, we will get our remission via the muzzle of a gun at the back of the head. I wonder, incidentally, why the Cheka MGB makes a point of shooting people in the back of the head. A low trick, I call it. I'd sooner take a volley in the chest with my eyes open. They're afraid to look their victims in the eye, that's what it is. And with so much work to be done, they want to spare the executioners too much nervous strain.
Reuben was at a loss for words. Nyazhin, too, fell silent, still lolling against the tree. You would have said that they had discussed everything under the sun from every imaginable angle, that there were no surprises left for them, but the two pairs of eyes, the dark brown and the dark blue, looked questioningly into each other. Reuben sighed.
But a telephone call like that is a crucial moment in world history. We have no moral right to ignore it.
Nyazhin roused himself.
So why don't you come straight out with it? Why all this flim-flam stuff about new sciences and remission of sentences? Your object is to catch the rascal, I take it.
Reuben's eyes narrowed and his features hardened.
Yes, that's what I want. This rotten little Moscow fancy-pants, this wretched little careerist, is obstructing the road to socialism and must be removed.
What makes you think he's a fancy-pants and a careerist?
I've heard his voice. And because he's so eager to curry favour with his foreign bosses.
Aren't you just salving your conscience?
What do you mean?
He's evidently fairly high up in the service, so wouldn't it be simpler for him just to curry favour with Vyshinsky? It seems a funny way to curry favour, with people in another country, without even telling them your name.
He's probably counting on turning up there. To go up the ladder, he'd have to keep on performing his boring old duties irreproachably, to earn some little decoration in 20 years' time, an extra palm leaf on his sleeve or whatever. But in the West, he could cause a world sensation and pocket a million.
Well, all the same, basing your judgment of somebody's motives on the sound of a voice in the 300 to 2400 hertz waveband.
What do you think? Was he telling the truth?
You mean about the radio shop?
Yes. Up to a point, he obviously was.
You mean there's a rational kernel in it?
Nyazhin said, teasing him. Oi, 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 Levka. So now you're standing up for thieves. They aren't thieves. They're intelligence agents.
What's the difference? Another lot of fancy-pants and careerists in New York this time may steal the secret of the atom bomb to line their pockets with 3 million rubles from the East. Only maybe you haven't heard their voices.
Idiot! The fumes from the night bucket have gone to your head. Prison has made you see everything in a false perspective. How can you compare people who are out to wreck socialism with those who serve it?
Reuben's face expressed suffering. Nyazhin shoved his cap farther back, he was feeling hot, and rested his head in the fork of the tree again.
Listen,
Whose marvellous lines were those I heard a little while ago, about the two Alyoshas? Things were different then, before I'd learned to discriminate, before my ideals were clearly defined. In those days, it was still possible. And now you see your ideal clearly in the shape of the gulag.
No, in the shape of the ethical ideals of socialism. Capitalism has none, just greed for profit. Listen.
By now, Nyezhin was wedging his shoulders into the fork of the tree, preparing himself for a long discussion.
Could you kindly explain these socialist ideals you talk about? They're nowhere to be seen at present.
All right, maybe somebody's botched the experiment, but when and where can we expect to see them? What do they amount to, eh?
Socialism, of whatever variety, is a sort of caricature of the gospel message. Socialism promises only equality and a full belly, and that only by means of coercion. Isn't that enough? Has any society in history ever had as much?
You'll find equality and full bellies in any good pigsty. What a tremendous favour they've bestowed on us. Equality and plenty. Give us a moral society.
We will. Just don't make difficulties. Don't get in the way. Don't make bomb-stealing difficult. What twisted minds some people have. How is it that all intelligent and straight-thinking people...
Nyezhin laughed.
Who? Yakov Ivanovich Mamurin?
Grigory Borisovich Abramson?
All the really enlightened minds, all the greatest thinkers in the West, Sartre, for instance, they all support socialism. They're all against capitalism. That's almost a platitude by now. You're the only one who can't see it. Pithecanthropus erectus.
Rubin loomed dangerously over Nyezhin and shook him with grappling fingers. Nyezhin planted his palms on Rubin's chest to push him away.
Have it your way. Maybe I am an ape. But I refuse to use your terminology. I refuse to talk about what you call capitalism and socialism. I don't understand these words, and I won't use them.
Rubin laughed and relaxed a little.
I suppose you prefer the language of utter clarity.
Yes, if you like.
What do you understand?
I understand words like a family of one's own, inviolability of the person,
unlimited freedom, perhaps.
No. Moral self-limitation.
Fetal philosopher. How far will you get with amorphous, protozoic concepts like that in the 20th century? Those are all class-conditioned ideas. Dependent on... Are they hell?
Nyezhin freed himself and stood up out of his niche.
Justice is never relative. It's a class concept. Of course it is, said Rubin,
brandishing an open hand over Nyezhin's head.
Justice is the cornerstone, the foundation of the universe.
Nyezhin, too, waved an arm. Anyone watching from a distance might have thought that they were about to start fighting.
We were born with a sense of justice in our souls. We can't and don't want to live without it. Remember what Fyodor Yoanich says? I am not strong, I am easily deceived, but I can distinguish white from black. Give me your keys, Godunov.
You've got nowhere to hide,
Rubin said threateningly.
You will have to declare some day which side of the barricade you're on.
Nyezhin answered just as angrily.
That's another word you blasted fanatics have done to death. You've put up barricades all over the world. That's the horror of it. A man may want to be a citizen of the world, a little lower than the angels, but they grab him by the legs and pull him down. Whoever is not with us is against us. Just leave me room to move in. Room to move in, I tell you.
Nyezhin pushed him away.
We would leave you room. It's those on the other side who won't.
You would, you say?
When did you ever let anybody move freely? It's tanks and fixed bayonets every inch of the way. Look, my friend, said Rubin more gently. Look at it in historical perspective. To hell with your perspective. I want to live now, not in the long term. I know what you're going to say. It's just a matter of bureaucratic distortions. This is a transitional period, a temporary state of affairs. But this transitional order of yours makes my life impossible. It tramples my soul underfoot. That's what your transitional system does, and I won't defend it, not being an imbecile.
I made a mistake disturbing you after your visit,
Rubin said quite gently.
Seeing my wife has nothing at all to do with it."
Nerjin spoke as bitterly as ever. "I think just the same at any other time. We ridicule the Christians, silly so-and-sos, living in hopes of paradise and putting up with absolutely everything on this earth. But what have we got to look forward to? For whose sake do we suffer? For our mythical descendants? What difference does it make whether it's happiness for posterity or happiness in the next world? We can't see either."
"You were never a Marxist."
"Alas, I was."
"You dog. You scoundrel. We learned how to classify voices together. What am I supposed to do now? Work by myself?"
"You'll find somebody."
"Who?"
Rubin pouted. Incongruously, the expression on his bold, piratical features was that of a hurt child.
"No, pal. It's no good you're taking offence. They drench me from head to foot with a certain yellowy-brown liquid, and I'm supposed to get the atom bomb for them? No thanks." "For us, you idiot! Not for them!"
"What do you mean, for us? Do you need the atom bomb?
I don't.
I'm like Zemelia. I have no ambition to rule the world." Rubin thought of something else.
"Joking apart, would you really let that little pimple make a present of the bomb to the West?"
"You're a bit mixed up, dear Lev." He touched the lapel of Rubin's overcoat affectionately. "The bomb is there in the West. They invented it, and you're trying to steal it."
"They're the ones who've dropped it."
Rubin's brown eyes flashed.
"And you're prepared to put up with that? You can connive at what the little pimple has done?"
Nerjin answered in the same thoughtful tone.
"Lev, my friend, you want life and poetry to be the same thing. Why are you so angry with the man?"
Rubin looked sourer still.
"So you're ready to be on the receiving end? Ready for a second Hiroshima? This time on Russian soil?"
"And you think stealing the bomb is the way to prevent that? The bomb must be morally outlawed, not stolen."
"Outlawed? How? Idealistic raving."
"Very simply. You just have to believe in the United Nations. You were offered the Baruch Plan. You should have signed on to it.
But no, the big chief must have the bomb."
Rubin was standing with his back to the exercise yard and the path, but Nerjin, facing the other way, saw Daronin rapidly approaching and whispered a warning.
"Careful, Ruska's coming. Don't turn around."
Then went on hurriedly, with no apparent break in the conversation.
"Tell me, did you come across the 689th Artillery Regiment out there?"
"Who did you know in it?"
Rubin, not yet tuned in, reluctantly answered.
"Major Kandibu. A curious thing happened to him."
"Gentlemen,"
said Ruska Daronin, in a cheerful, guileless voice. Rubin turned round with a grunt and frowned at him.
"What do you want, Junior?"
Rastislav's candid gaze rested on Rubin. His face radiated honesty.
"Lev Grigorievich, it's very upsetting. I come to you with an open heart, and the very people I trust most look at me suspiciously. What can I expect from the rest?"
"Gentlemen, I've come to make you an offer. If you like, I'll sell all the Judases during the dinner break tomorrow, at the very moment when they pick up their 30 pieces of silver.